Hello, Red Spotters. Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kyle Lira, and today we have a new to the table for you. Today's episode, we talk Metallica Through the Never and Evil Dead, the Sam Raimi classic, I would say, and the Dane DeHaan Nimrod Antal classic.
Two classics.
All for the price of one podcast. Anyway, joining me today is the ever here Peter Martinez. How are you doing today, sir?
Yeah, I really need to get a life. I mean, just always here.
Nah, it's good. Otherwise, we have nobody to be on the show.
Special recurring guest star.
Special recurring guest star, Jim Broadbent. Game of Thrones. Watch Game of Thrones, guys. Game of Thrones is getting really good. On today's To the Table, we have Metallica Through the Never, and we also have The Evil Dead. Peter gave me The Evil Dead to watch, and I gave Peter Metallica Through the Never to watch.
And if you know us, I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
but at least it created a theme, I guess. Satanic episodes.
Satanic episodes.
If only you gave me the Lady Gaga movie.
Oh, yeah. The Monster Ball Tour movie.
Monster Ball Tour movie.
I'll switch it around. I'll have you talk about Metallica Through the Never, and then I'll talk about Evil Dead last.
All right.
I'm dying to know what you thought of Metallica Through the Never.
Okay, so I guess the question first is, why did you want me to see Metallica Through the Never?
I think it is an amazingly put together concert film. Like, if somebody was to go like this, what can you do with the concert film and not make it just simply the band playing?
Mm-hmm.
I would go to Metallica Through the Never because it has a story going on with it. The action that's going on in the story is going along with the music that's going on in the concert itself. And not just that, Metallica is the greatest band ever.
Yeah, I was like, when is he going to mention that part?
So, I think more people should be watching this movie. It tanked at the box office.
Oh yeah, I looked that up. I was like, wow, it made that really surprised me.
Yeah, I mean,
because you have like all those other concert movies making money, but yeah. Like, Metallica's bigger than all of them. How did they not make money?
They spent like $32 million or something like that on the film, and they only got like $9 million of it in return. So it tanked at the box office, and it was and seeing it on the IMAX screen for me was like, oh my god, like the sound, the concert footage and all that, and seeing Metallica on IMAX was pretty cool. But nothing compares to seeing them actually live, mm-hmm. You know, but this was a close second to seeing them actually physically there, you know. So, Peter, tell me about Metallica Through the Never.
Oh, do you want me to explain the story?
Sure, go ahead.
Metallica's, they're at this giant concert, just banging it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Dane DeHaan. He's doing shit. He needs, I guess the story originally is, he needs to put gas in this truck.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to put gas in.
Oh my god. I'm gonna let one of them in. I'm gonna let Dixie in. Dixie, come in. Alright, go on, continue.
He needs to put gas in this truck, but then it comes about him trying to take the bag back to, what's it called? Back to the concert, and it's mm-hmm. basically just like him going through a bunch of weird, visually crazy shit
as
trying to retrieve this bag.
Mm-hmm.
This was a difficult movie. Like, after I watched it, I was like, how do I
review it?
Because, and then I finally just came down to this analogy.
What?
For how I think I kind of feel about everything, including the concert movies. I feel like I'm this young guy, and I don't know about my sexuality. I'm like, am I gay or not? You know? Yeah, this is what I came up with.
Okay, I'm with you. I'm with you so far.
Okay. And then finally, I hook up with the hottest girl in school. And then it's like, yeah, I'm gay. and Metallica Through the Never was the hottest girl in school. And I guess it's like how I feel about concert movies as a whole. In that I feel like they're just not for me. Because mm-hmm. to me, Metallica Through the Never, it really did genuinely feel like the best I've seen as far as concert movies.
Okay.
I think it's... I haven't seen many, especially all the way through. I've seen, like, little bits, pieces here and there. But if, you know, coming from someone, again, who hasn't seen many, this really feels like the best one out there.
Mm-hmm. And to me, it is.
It is.
It's next to... What's it called? The Song Remains the Same from Led Zeppelin and Shine a Light from Martin Scorsese.
But I mean, like, from the production value to the music mm-hmm. to... and again, I'm not the biggest Metallica fans, but I can tell when there's, like, little Easter eggs in there mm-hmm. for, like, some hardcore band fans.
Yeah.
And then even the story going on with Dane DeHaan, it's not really a story. It's more of, like, a visual music video going along with it. Mm-hmm. But it was shot really well, and it was really visually interesting. And if anything, it just made me feel like I want more Metallica in movies. You know, like more Metallica songs, more people to put them in movies.
You got a little bit of that. You got For Whom the Bell Tolls in a Zombieland and stuff like that.
But I don't know, just at the end of the day, and maybe it comes down to, like, I love music, but I'm not, like, a big music person.
Yeah.
Like, I've never been really to a concert, you know, and I've never felt that need to, like, yes, go out
and get into the scene.
Yeah.
You know?
And, like, to me, the only real reason I would watch music is to watch it live, because uh-huh. it's like you're there, you can see the people that you love. And even then, it's like, for me. So watching it on a TV screen, I got bored. The boredom, though, I know it was on my end, not on the movie's end, because I'm like, they're, as far as, you know, this genre of film,
mm-hmm.
they're doing everything right. Like, everything you can do to make this, like, interesting, the music, the camera angles as it, like, goes around the band, and the band's just playing their heart out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, I guess it's just kind of not for me, you know? Because to me, it's like, okay, I'm watching them play, and I'm watching them play, and I'm watching them play. And it's like, I'm loving the music, but it's like, visually, it's like, yeah, they're playing. So I think this is me just finally like, yep, I don't like that, you know, I'm gay, I don't like that kind of sex. Or that you know, male, female, I don't like females at this point being... what's it called? Concert movies.
Okay.
Yeah. I totally see how, like, how awesome they are and why people love them. But I don't know. It's just like, yeah, they're playing. That's cool.
I guess.
I always perked up a little bit more whenever Dane DeHaan would get on screen, because I'm like, oh, that looks like a movie. You know? So I think that really says something.
The way that Metallica, because they were heavily involved in making this movie. Like,
yeah, you can tell.
Their fingers were all into making the movie. Like, a lot of the band members were, like, throwing ideas. Like, oh, it was Lars's idea that, oh, Lars is the drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, like, saying, have the main villain be a horseman type.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so just the way that they threw a lot of ideas to the wall like that, it was they said that for the casual film goer, they'll give less shits about what Metallica is doing and what more Dane DeHaan is doing,
mm-hmm.
and they aptly said that only 25% of the movie was Dane DeHaan and the rest was a concert film.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I, for like a casual film goer, I understand that yeah, you want to see more of Dane DeHaan and all that stuff and more less Metallica you know, and that's very understandable. But for me, I'm biased in this.
Unbelievably.
When Metallica was there, I was like, yeah, Metallica. But then the story comes in, I'm like, this is a nice story, you know. So to me, it really married the two perfectly to me. And I thought that this film definitely superseded what many typical concert movies do. Because usually you see them backstage, you know, sipping on wine or some shit like that. And then they go up on stage and do their shit for an hour. And that's the movie. But this one, they really threw it out for the Metallica fans out there. Mm-hmm. You said that there was a bunch of Easter eggs that you saw that could have been.
They seemed like they were probably Easter
like
eggs.
Like what did you think were Easter eggs when you saw the movie?
The bag.
Because
there was a lot of focus on the bag. Like, what is this?
And did you see that? Did you stay towards the credits?
I saw, because they were still playing, so I'm like, okay, well, this is basically the movie, so I just kept watching it.
Mm-hmm.
It went through the whole credits, which is pretty awesome. I know at the end they zoomed in on the bag,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't sure what that meant.
I have a feeling there's a lot of theories out there, and I think like the most credible theory is that it's probably Cliff Burton's soul in there. Cliff Burton is the original bassist who unfortunately died while they were touring for the third album. And that song that they were playing, Orion, was their song.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a little sense of, okay, you get a little bit of that. Mm-hmm.
And if I was like a hardcore Metallica fan, like that would be blowing my mind. Like, oh shit,
yeah.
Like that's badass. It seems like they probably... I'm not too familiar, but they might have recreated their album covers.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Okay.
For example, when they played the song "Ride the Lightning," all right, that's a title track of their album called "Ride the Lightning," and that's about a guy who gets sent to the electric chair without any reason or rhyme, and they flick the switch, and that's it. You see on the cover. An electric chair with a bunch of lightning going towards the chair, and that's why they call it "Ride the Lightning." Anyway, a giant electric chair comes down, and a bunch of lightning is coursing through with the Tesla coils.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool seeing, and just that visual little cue to the album cover. It was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that you saw was Lady Justice. Come out the big old statue.
Yeah, and then
the
it
big
falls.
Old statue, and then it falls. That's uh-huh. direct imagery from the album and Justice for All,
mm-hmm.
and I like how it came tumbling down. And also, it's another callback to a tour that they did, and it was the Damaged Justice tour, where they completed the third album tour, and they did and Justice for All.
Mm-hmm.
So they had that statue there at the concert, and they just brought it out, put it in the corner. But here it's, you know, actually put in the forefront, and it tumbles down, and that was pretty cool. They put imagine if one of them hit like the drummer or something like that.
And I was like, because there were certain things in the film where I'm like, okay, that's probably staged, and I was like, was this, I guess. It tumbling down, yeah, it was obviously staged, but I was like, did they do this during the concert? Because, like, a piece got dangerously close to the drummer. And I was like, oh, boy, like, how many times did they practice this
like
before?
I saw the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And what it was is that they put nets around. You know, you don't see it, but there was nets definitely around to capture all the loose pieces and all that stuff. So they definitely took safety precautions, especially when they did they did Ride the Lightning, because Tesla coils were involved. They had to switch from digital because all the digital stuff got warped and all that shit.
And also because they
were running via wireless. It shocked Kirk Hammett one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they're like, okay, we got to switch to analog for this one song. So they switched to analog and they did everything manually. Which I think that Ride the Lightning song version is the best sounding because they switched to analog, you know, instead of digital. But I think that a lot of cool things like for Master Puppets, they brought out the crosses. Out from the stage. There were
songs that there are songs that everyone knows, like one.
Yeah.
When they had the helicopter fire. Yeah. I was like, that's a cool visual, like, cause that looks real. And it's like,
yeah, all the stuff on the stage.
And they're doing it, they're obviously doing it with like lights and like puffs of smoke.
But yeah, like, and then they had like the soldiers in the background, and that was pretty cool. Enter Sandman, there's the flaming guy.
Yeah.
And that flaming guy is also an Easter egg for those who've been following the band since the 90s. And the flaming guy has been in part of the show in the 90s, and so they brought it back. And there was headlines where it was like, oh, a guy got caught, a techie got burnt on fire.
See, that was one of the things where I'm like, okay, that's obviously staged.
Yeah.
But they're making it seem real.
Yeah, but you know, the good people of Vancouver, who that's where the thing was filmed, the good people of Vancouver didn't know that it was staged.
Yeah.
So they were like, newspaper guys, this guy got burnt.
They're probably like, this is awesome.
But he got burnt. And so there was like headlines saying that techie got caught on fire on Metallica, not knowing that it was staged. So
I also thought it was funny. He's like, he's all right. Let's keep playing.
Yeah.
Like, that should have been obvious. Like, yeah, everything's fine.
Yeah. Another thing that was cool was like when they went minimalistic. And they were all around each other, and they played the final song, "Hit the Lights," which is the first song of that they ever made. And they played it at the end of the movie, and that was pretty cool. And he's like, "Oh, it's like being in the garage again." And I, you know, you get kind of like a band sentimentality thing. Mm-hmm. What did you think about the action pieces that were going on with following Dane DeHaan's adventure?
They didn't make sense. But I don't think they needed to. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was the point. It was just more of like the invoking feelings to go along with the song,
mm-hmm.
and you know, just more visual splendor, if you will. I don't know, but they were shot really well. You know, there was like, oh, like this looks really cool, and you know, that's surprising to me for what's it called, a concert movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, cinematography is maybe not the thing they're most important, the thing they're thinking about the most.
Yeah.
When it came to these sections, but no, they did a really good job, and it gave it a nice visual style. And again, when that's over playing like some of the songs, I'm thinking like, yeah, I wish Metallica songs made it into more movies, because this is great.
It definitely feels it, like when they got to like the cyanide part, and again, another Easter egg. You saw the coffins.
Yeah.
Up on the thing, that's taken from the album cover of Death Magnetic, which the songs come from. And then you see Cyanide, and you see the riot going on, and that was a pretty cool visual. What else is there to talk about the movie?
The players themselves, I guess. Great acting. No, they did great. I know it's hard to discuss a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
mainly because it's like...
There's music,
and then that's the movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where it loses me some. And I know I'm very much in the minority in this.
Uh-huh.
Because I know there's a lot of people who just, like, they'll just go on their laptop or on their phone, and they'll just bring up music videos and watch them along with the music.
Yeah.
And I know that's big with, like, most people. And for me, it's like, I can appreciate a good music video,
mm-hmm.
But mostly like watching them play live, and I'm just kind of like, well, unless I'm there, it's like,
what's the point?
You know, what's the point? but I'm sure compared to you already do like this kind of, because you have seen other concert movies in theaters.
Yeah, I I've seen Shine a Light, the Rolling Stones movie, and that was my introduction to the Stones, and that was pretty cool. That was a Martin Scorsese directed one, you know. And in between songs, like when an artist was featured in a song, they cut to like old recordings, old footage of them like talking about what it's like to be in the Stones or what it's like to, you know, like music and shit like that. And so that was definitely a key element into making Through the Never, you know. So I think that
I've never seen that specific music not music video concert movie. And there are several ones probably that other people hold in higher regard, but me personally, just looking at this, I'm like, yeah, you know, everything you would probably want out of a concert movie is right here. And especially if you're a huge fan of the band, and Metallica is pretty big, pretty famous, you know, that's most people. So I definitely think it's a good movie, especially a pretty great concert movie, if not the best of its kind. Again, my opinion kind of means very little on that because I haven't really seen any.
Yeah.
But...
which I should probably give you the Rolling Stones Shine a Light.
Shine a Light.
it has some cool people in there, like Christina Aguilera and Jack White. So there's more of a variety. It's not just the Stones.
No, but overall, I do think it's a really good movie. I just, at the end of the day, I'm starting to think, like, yeah, maybe this genre just isn't for me. And it's a little weird, because I kind of like every genre of film.
Yeah.
But to me, this is just more of like, I don't know. Like I said, at the end of the day, I would, if there was a Metallica concert and there was like an opportunity for me to be there, it's like, oh, cool, awesome. They're in a heartbeat. See them live. Great. See them in the theater. I'd probably get bored, you know. So it's more of my personal preference really the movie.
But when they did play the hits like One or Inner Sandman or anything like that.
I was there. I was with it. I was like, okay, yeah, this is cool.
Okay.
That's why I know everything about this, I was like, this is great.
If only I was a Metallica fan, it would be even greater.
And if only I was like a bigger music fan in general.
Yeah.
I think if I was a bigger music fan, it would be easier for me to just get into, just even if it was a band I didn't know, it's like, oh, but the music itself is enough to pull me in, and you know, the artists playing, seeing them. But it's like, I enjoy music, but more of like just like how everyone as a regular person, not any more than that. And I know you for sure are like way bigger
into like the music scene. World yeah, and all that stuff. World. I'm biased. I've said it before, but I really enjoyed Through the Never, and I saw it. We went, me and my family, we love Metallica, you know, so we all went up and we watched. We went to San Diego just to watch it, you know.
That's dedication.
Because there's no IMAX screens where we live. So the nearest screen is 2 hours away, you know. So seeing it on like the big screen like that was like,
I'm sure that adds a hell of a lot more.
Yeah, and like the sound, and it was completely. I think they've never sounded any better, and I think that the best live recording that they have is the soundtrack to this movie. It's just the live recordings, you know, to me, I think that there's a lot of cool elements, like all the Easter eggs, like the electric chair, the statue, Lady Justice statue, and all that stuff.
I will say this, like, it is kind of depressing to me, because even though this might not be my cup of tea, I'm glad that it's out there, and I'm glad that people, you know, this type of genre of film is out there, and people are taking advantage of enjoying it, and it bums me out that it, like, a band and the people that made this really put a lot of effort in and he got like no money back. When I see there's like, I see all kinds of other concert
like
movie
Justin
films,
Bieber, Never Say Never,
and they're so, they just look so lazy.
Yeah, like, it was just like shoot the concert and that's it. But that's, here they actually put like a story element into it.
They really attempt to give you something special, and it kind of bums me out. But,
and they
like,
and they
didn't make their money.
Yeah, they made these specific things for the show. Like at one point, it's a deleted part of the concert film, but there's one moment where they're going to play I Think Seek and Destroy. Mm-hmm. It's another song from their catalog, and a giant toilet was going to come out with a giant knife coming out in the center.
Yeah.
So just stuff like that. I mean, they went above and beyond to make this awesome concert film, but yet saw none of it in return.
Surprises me.
Yeah.
Because on the surface, it just looks like such a way better put together concert film
than any other concert film ever.
Yeah, and not on the surface compared to a lot of these other concert film movies that come out in theaters. Way better performers and way better band. So it's like,
I mean, these guys came out and they did their thing. And also, I like how in the beginning of the film, the band had their own introductions.
Yeah, and And to me, I was like, okay, even though I don't really know these band members, it gives me a little bit of an insight to them. Mm-hmm. It gives me a little bit of character. Like, and for people who do know them, it's fucking awesome.
Yeah,
because you know that's them.
Because James Hetfield, he loves his hot rods and his vehicles and all that stuff, and he comes in with a gray vehicle, you know, and it's like, and it's spooting out a fire from its spokes. That's pretty cool. Kirk Hammett, he loves his blood, he loves his horror and all that stuff, and you saw blood coming off of his guitar, and then you see Robert Trujillo, the bassist, and he's just in his own little space, you know, bassing away. And then you have the businessman, which is Lars Ulrich, and he's like discussing business with some stage managers and all that shit. And so you get, I think that this is a more personal film for the band and its fans and those who know it. And I thought that this would be, I guess, a good introduction to Metallica to you.
Well, I know Metallica, but I guess a higher level of introduction.
Yeah, yeah. Like, this is, you want to know what fucking Metallica is? Here it is.
The real Metallica.
This is a real story. Not like the real Ghostbusters. final thoughts on the film.
Final thoughts. Overall, I do think it's a great movie, really well put together. If you're a big music lover, of concert films are kind of your thing, watch it. And I would say buy it, because it does kind of suck that, you know, something that was, you know, it seemed well made and so much effort was put into it by the band, you know, obviously really caring about their fans. That, you know,
not a lot of people
appreciate
it. I think it's also a little thing about marketing, because it wasn't heavily marketed.
I remember hearing about it when it came out. But
yeah, but it wasn't like, oh, go see the next Avengers and
well,
shit like
obviously.
That. It wasn't marketed like that.
Yeah, at the end of the day, this genre might not be for me, but this film is definitely a shining point for the genre. I guess I would put it that way.
Okay, so, Peter,
mm-hmm.
You had me watch Evil Dead.
The Evil Dead, the 1984?
Yeah.
It was 1984 or 81,
Sam Raimi classic.
Sam Raimi original, beautiful classic.
Why did you want me to watch it?
Because I love horror films. And
really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
And in a way, The Evil Dead is almost like, it's not nearly the first or the last, but just in a weird way, it's sort of the granddaddy of horror films. It's that classic tale. It's very simplistic, but it's weird, it's scary, it's funny. And
it is funny.
The fact that it came from, it's like everything about horror that makes it so great is just infused into this movie. The fact that it's low budget, you know, a lot of horror films come from that, you know, an up-and-coming director, a great star like Bruce Campbell.
And that was pretty much, for the time, Sam Raimi's magnum opus.
Yeah, that's what jump started his career.
Mm-hmm.
It really
and Bruce Campbell's career as well.
Bruce Campbell's. It really covers the gambit on like everything that makes horror so fun and interesting. You know, the suspense, the gore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cheap scares, the not so cheap scares, the silliness of it, but also, you know, the real horror behind it. Demons, cabins in the wood, you know, it's just a hell of a good time, I think. And it's one of my favorite films, not just horror, but...
of all time?
Yeah, it's great. I don't know. But so I'm interested. I understand it's sort of a weird thing to come into all these years later.
Yeah.
How did you feel? I'm sure there's a wide range of emotions.
I get that this movie was made in the 80s. Okay.
Oh, really?
I get that this movie was made in the 80s, so I put that with the mindset of watching this movie. It was...
Throw it out there.
It's one of the most hilariously disturbing things I've watched in a while. First of all, Bruce Campbell's Ash, he's cool. He's a cool cat.
Mm-hmm.
He quote unquote survives at the end. You know, we think until they do a whole Ghostbusters thing at the end of the credits, or the ghost keeps on going towards him.
That's and Evil then, Dead 2, sir.
Oh my god. I liked it for what it was trying to do.
Uh-huh.
When all the girls start turning and they start getting possessed,
deadites.
The number one lesson that I learned about all that stuff is that getting raped by trees is freaking scary as shit.
I don't think you needed to visualize that to understand that, though.
But anyway.
Yeah.
When they were like, and they were doing, like, the whole stereotypical, I get, like, oh my god. I thought freaking Bette Midler and all that stuff were over the top playing, like, evil.
No,
evil,
it's completely
evil entities.
Over the top.
But then this one, I'm like, oh my god, there is not enough scenery in this fucking movie for these girls and actresses to chew. And just, like, the makeup, it looked like some, like, the masks that I think Cheryl was the character. She like the mask that she had on. Like I think I saw that mask at Party City at one point. You know, so a couple of things like that. I like the Winston-esque effects of them decaying at the end. Very Raiders of the Lost Ark ish. That was pretty cool seeing. The one moment where I felt something was when he was talking to his buddy and his buddy was dead and he was like giving him like I guess whiskey or something like that. It was like, it's okay, we're gonna go home and all that stuff. It was like, it's okay, Timmy, you're gonna make it towards Christmas. You know, I felt that kind of motion with it. But I think a lot of the movie was hokey as hell. I was laughing at some of the things. Like there was cool visuals. There's three visuals that I think. Just one of a close up of Bruce Campbell, and he looks to the camera just dead on. Just the way that his face filled the frame. That was pretty cool. When Cheryl was freaking out after the bridge was destroyed, and she was like, and the only thing that you see is their silhouettes against the car headlights. That was pretty cool. Also, when he put his hand through the mirror and it was just water.
Yeah.
You know, that was another cool visual. I mean, there's definitely cool visuals and cool things about it. However, I could not get over, like, I guess that's the angle that they were going for. Very hokey. But the hokiness, I guess, in a strange way, kept my interest. Because I couldn't stop laughing. I couldn't stop laughing. Call me a sadistic fuck, but I was laughing throughout the whole thing.
No, this was... It basically almost cornered the genre on horror comedy. Like, it really
gave it life. And because his horror antics, and I think you won't be shocked to be surprised about this, but one of Sam Raimi's biggest influence was the Three Stooges.
Really?
And that's why, it's as interesting as this film is, it's almost just as interesting to, like, see a lot of behind the scenes and how the film was made, because it was made over, like, a year's period of time. Actors would drop in and drop out. That's why a lot of the when they were all messed up, like, one time it was his brother, another time he was playing one. It was a very dangerous set when they broke the window.
Uh-huh.
Because they were first-time filmmakers. They didn't know what they were doing. They literally broke the window, like, smashed the camera against the window. When Ash fires at one of the Deadites, those are real bullets. They just had to get out of the way. So it was made with, like, a no-nothing budget. That's why the effects, to me, are so just incredible, because... Mm-hmm. You talk about Raiders of the Lost Ark, that was a full-fledged production, you know, the at that time.
Yeah.
This was an indie film, basically, at that time.
And it definitely shows. I mean, number one, it all relied on one location, pretty much that cabin, with the exception of the bridge.
Yeah.
But other than that, everything revolved around that cabin.
Oh, another thing, that cabin, it did not have a cellar. Whenever they would go into the... What they did was they dug, like a 4-foot deep hole.
Mm-hmm.
And they would pretend to go down to the cellar, but all the cellar shots were done in, like... One of them was in Sam Raimi's garage. Half of the shots, and then the other half were in this other cellar they found somewhere else. But they literally just didn't even have a cellar. So it's...
The power of filmmaking.
Yeah,
right there.
To me, whenever I see this film, I'm like, this is filmmaking to me. Like, this is awesome. Just people believing in a kooky, crazy film, and then just the different ways they go about to getting the production made. And it is... I have a really dark sense of humor. I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh, me too, man. Me too.
So, the Evil Dead is really right up my alley. You know, mm-hmm. just how ridiculous Looney Tunes they are with the violence... But it's also, like, pretty grotesque at the same... And you do wince, like, when... I can't remember who it was, but when she stabbed one of the girls in her ankle. In her ankle.
Yeah.
And was just twisting it. Oh, like, that always gets to me. Like, I can feel it in my ankle, and I hate that. But to me, it's just... It's fun, you know? And I'm sure it's... I guess you could say horror comedy, but it is... It does run the gambit on a lot of different genres.
Horror stuff.
Horror, there is suspense, like, there are times where, like, what's gonna happen next, and then it's either a genuine scare, or just a complete goof.
Yeah.
And they mess around.
Like, the one moment that the moment that I generally find horrifying in The Evil Dead is the moment where Cheryl, I guess, she, like... Typical stupid cabin goers in a horror movie. They have to check outside to see what's going on. And the trees pretty much become possessed and pretty much take her over and do the dirty. And then while she was running away from that, trying to get, like, the keys and all that shit, and then trying to put it in the slot and trying to open it, and, like, all the other keys are not working, of course. I mean, I'm like,
horror movie.
To me, I was like, okay, I've seen this before, but what they're doing with it, because there are actual stakes, the trees, and you're in a fucking
you're in the woods.
Surrounded by trees, so any one of them could be possessed or anything like that.
Plus the visual of, like, the whole kind of rape scene.
Yeah.
The way the trees move, it was like, this is really well done.
Yeah.
Know, the visual of that going on. What was I gonna say? I will say that story-wise, there's not really much story.
Yeah.
It really is just...
It's just three possessed girls going after
just like
this guy. And
bunch of young, sexually active adults going into the woods, having a good time, and uh-oh, they accidentally opened a port of the hell. You know, your typical everyday story.
Like the Necronomicon or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I really enjoy the lore of that, too. Like, they don't touch too much on it, but it's especially...
You definitely can tell that it's an entity.
Yeah, but just like the whole, the Book of the Dead, the Necronomicon, mm-hmm. and then how it goes to, they're called Deadites, the ones that become possessed, and they have like a signature look in the way they act.
You mean Party City Mask?
Yes. But it's like, they have this like, the smile, and then their eyes are all white.
The effects here look way better than in humans.
These effects are amazing to me. No, but there's another thing that was dangerous. One of the Deadites, whenever they would put like their eyes, where they're all white, there were contacts, and they were so thick that they literally couldn't see through them. So when they're running at the actors with a real knife, trying to stab at them, they are blind. So the actors, Ash had to really stop them and really do that. And there's a couple of cuts and bruises on them that were real because they had to do it real. I know you haven't seen, and I don't know if you'll ever see them, but like the Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, and then I've only seen Ash versus Evil Dead Season 1, which mm-hmm. is a TV show. Like there's this entire lore.
Is it in the same canon?
Yes.
All of it?
Well, the funny thing is, each film, mm-hmm. Evil Dead, and then the Evil Dead 2, and then Army of Darkness, all three were made by different movie companies. So no, like, one person kind of owns the rights to all of the films and stuff like that. So when they made the television show, it was mostly supposed to be a direct continuation of the first and second film, mm-hmm. mainly because they didn't have the rights to Army of Darkness. They don't say that it doesn't exist, they just go out of their way not to mention it. But so it's funny the way that works, but it's they will show flashbacks to the first film, and the second film is almost basically a remake of the first film, but it's also a continuation, a sequel, because it literally starts at the very end when what's-his-name gets possessed by, you know how the end of Evil Dead, it's like, oh, the demon runs at him.
Which, and then cut to credits, and it was a very funny, the end credits, because it was, like, such, like, folky music played at the end.
It's supposed to have a sense of humor. Like, I know a lot of, some people who might not get it, they watch it the first time, and they're like, this is terrible. Like, I'm laughing. This isn't a good horror film. They're like, no. Like, that's kind of the whole point.
And I know Sam Raimi, he's very quirky.
Yes. And he has a distinct style to his filmmaking. And I think you can see that here. Especially having already seen his Spider-Man film.
Yeah. And also, another thing, I see a lot of like, shots and a lot of shit from when he did the Dr. Octopus birth scene.
Yeah.
Where, when he was in the hospital, and all the doctors were fighting off the tentacles and all that shit, that very felt like I was watching some of the shots in Evil Dead. I'm like this, Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man 2.
Like, a lot of those, like, voom, camera zooms into the face and, like, screaming. And then especially the way things are lit, like, it's very obvious that they have lights, like, underneath to create shadows and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, the very obvious, like, stylistic lighting. But it fits the mood because it's not supposed to feel realistic. Mm-hmm. In a sense,
it's a fantasy. So
I don't know. To me, it's just fun as hell. It's a fun as hell thrill ride.
It's a fun as hell thrill ride.
Do you have any negatives? Because I'm pretty sure you have to have negatives. Because it's, I don't.
It's the same reason why I'm so frustrated with Alien Covenant. Because of everybody is so fucking stupid.
Yeah.
The whole reason why this whole thing goes on is because Cheryl fucking steps outside when, you know, when if something's out there, you stay the fuck inside, you know, that's where you're safe. And no, she has to step outside. Hello, is something wrong? You know, and and then all the decisions that everybody makes after that, like, oh, you're going to bring the scary demon inside. You're not going to try and kill the demon, you know? So, and keeping the demon in the basement or something like that. That was fucking bullshit. I'm like, okay, you keep her outside, you know, keep her outside, kill her outside, bury her and shit like that, you know, you'll be done, you'll be all done, but no, no, they, the freaking stupid ass people, to me, it has nothing to do with, like, visuals or style about the movie. It's just the fucking characters themselves. Ash is pretty cool.
Everyone else is kind of fodder.
But everybody else, like, is
they don't
there
have
to,
much of a character.
Is there to die.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much. And that kind of pisses me off, because I'm like, when his girlfriend dies, I know nothing other than he gives her a necklace at that one scene.
Yeah.
That's the only good thing you get. So I don't really give a shit about these. I'm just like, kill him and all this stuff. So I felt very, like, I guess, like, nuanced when watching the movie. I was like, okay, what's the next scene? What's the next kill? What's the next scare? Which is a really huge detriment to the film. But other than that, I think that it is a very stylistically pleasing movie. If you're finicky towards blood, don't watch this movie at all, because this is a bloody fucking movie.
I say do watch it. Get over it.
A lot of cool shots, like I said, the one where Cheryl is going all nuts and shit like that when she sees the bridge damaged by the trees, and then you see Ash trying to comfort her, you know, and all you see is the silhouettes of the thing. I was like, that is damn beautiful. That is Sam Raimi. Mwah. Beautiful. I don't love it per se, but I don't hate it or dislike it either. You know,
I will say this about your negatives. I think there's a difference though.
What?
Compared to Alien Covenant. Alien Covenant, they are full grown extreme adult
scientists.
On a mission, you know, sent specifically for certain reasons.
And then they pretty much divert their situation because they heard a John Denver song.
And this, they're stupid, you know, the typical stupid horny teenagers,
yeah,
you know, doing stupid things. And it's easier to chew, and also just the fact that, like, I kind of like those classic horror movie tropes, those throw-ups.
Yeah.
Not literal throw, but like the shout outs to those kind of things. Like I recently saw Annabelle, and it didn't break the mold in any way. Like, it's very much like you have every, it's the story from the scares, it's everything you've seen before.
But it was aesthetically pleasing to you, and the horrors were actually genuine.
The execution, I think, is what sells it. And I think that's sort of the same way
I feel about Evil Dead.
Yeah, the execution sells it. So, like, when they're acting like stupid teenagers, to me, it's sort of like,
okay, this is a typical horror movie checkpoint.
Yeah, and I fall in love with those kind of tropes. And also, what was I gonna say? Oh, yeah, I do totally get, like, the other characters not getting much of anything. But to me, it was, the character you're always supposed to care about is Ash. He's the one you start with.
He's your hero of the movie.
And in the second one, it's basically just him for like 90% of the movie, and I kind of feel that's the way this movie was too. It's just they were there to get the kills and everything, but because the film is supposed to be like these Looney Tunes horror joyride, it's like, yeah, like my emotional connection was to Ash, and if he was the only one, that's fine.
And I had to do this movie twice. I had to watch it twice just to get, you know, the feel to it. I'm like, okay, let me watch it, because I watched it a few days ago and I let my mind digest what I just saw, and then I'm like, okay, let me watch it again, see if my emotions change to it, and nope, it didn't. but I definitely see why you love it. I definitely see why you love it, and I guess that's the same thing for Metallica Through the Never. You see why I love the movie.
Also, that whole, like, demon vision shot where it's like,
running.
Sam Raimi basically, he created that. Like, everything after that
is because of that.
It started with Evil Dead. I don't know. I love the world. I love the crazy evil demon antics. I love Ash. love the gore, love the scares, love the goofs. And it's you can see why it became a classic, at least, I think is what you're getting
at. I could see what, yeah, I could definitely see, like, a lot of influences with a lot of modern horror movies, you know, that were made today. A lot of, especially during Scream, when they pretty much criticize these tropes, like, there's no end.
Well, Scream's okay, but the one I always turn to is Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Because that cabin was the Evil Dead cabin.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I did not know that about that movie.
And, you know, they reference that film a lot, like, with the whole attic thing.
Yeah.
The cellar. Part.
Basement.
Mm-hmm. And basically just deconstructing all the tropes and everything
that are
horror films. Literally, every time I see a horror film, there's always one point in the film where I'm thinking of, like, there's, like, the office people, like, okay, push the button now, and then the people, like, drop the knife or something like that. Like, when I was reaching Annabelle, I was like, oh, they picked up this, they picked up the Annabelle doll, that means they're gonna
be
killed.
Something's gonna happen. Yeah. This movie wasn't, there was a lot of moments in this movie that were predictable.
Oh, yeah.
Like, okay, this is the part where she's gonna turn, right? Now, and then she does it, and then I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hate it. It's kind of like the Three Bears, you know. It wasn't too warm. It wasn't too cold. It was just right in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to me about this movie. I definitely had a good time. Watching and laughing towards the people, like.
I will say also, I think a big aspect of why I love this film too is the filmmaking aspect.
Yeah,
like just watching, like, oh, how did they do that? You know, and it's like, oh, and I can see the mask there. I don't know.
So to you, this is your Star Wars.
I don't know if it's that big. But in the same way, I think that the whole filmmaking aspect really just blows your mind with Star Wars.
Yeah.
It does so for me here, too, as well. It makes sense of what I just said.
So, like, the first Star Wars movie, pretty much, by and large, is an indie film.
Well, no. It was made by a company, Lucasfilm. But they gave him, like, a nothing budget, and he was in the middle of nowhere, so he could make whatever decisions he wanted. But to me, The Evil Dead truly is just, like, these filmmakers and these friends from college. They're just like, we want to let's make a film. Like, let's do this. And just the trials and tribulations, and then just the fact that they were able to make something so awesome come out of it. It's awesome to me. I love it. I think it's what filmmaking is about, creating new and unique experiences through just the love of filmmaking.
Yeah, and I definitely, it's the same way to the way that you feel about Through the Never.
Yeah,
and
I can see that.
And then you, these movies go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
similar messages, I guess.
Yeah.
We recognize they're good
films.
But they might not be for us.
This may not be for us, but you could definitely tell the quality and the passion that went into these movies. And yeah, I could definitely see that. Like, Metallica, they love movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided, let's make a movie. And Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell said, we like movies. Let's go make a movie. So they both went out and did movies, and both were independently made, and they're still, Metallica is still getting a check for the movie, is paying off.
You're still trying to pay it off.
pay it off, unfortunately. I don't know, I'm pretty sure Sam Raimi made his Evil Dead money.
Oh, he made it back in spades.
Yeah, so I guess 1-1.
Yay!
And 1 didn't. So I don't know. I liked it. I liked it. Alexis Moreno, we love you. You know we do. Anyway, my final thoughts is that I genuinely like the movie. I definitely see a lot of hard work put into the movie, a lot of dedication. And I guess that's the same way that you feel about Metallica Through the Never, you know? And that's...
We'll put it this way. This episode was about finding newfound appreciation...
in different things.
In different types of film that we probably wouldn't have seen if it weren't for this episode.
This segment of the, of the podcast thing. So, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, that was our episode To the Table with Peter Martinez and Kyle Lira over here. Check out our other podcasts on iTunes and podcast.com. Check out our To the Tables, which come out every Wednesday and Friday. Tomorrow's Wednesday, so it's going to be up by the time you're listening to it, it's already going to be up. That's pretty stupid.
Yeah, I think I would assume it would be up if they were listening to it.
Either that or this got leaked somewhere. I don't know.
Part of the HBO leak.
Leaks, yeah. By the way, that reminds me. This upcoming podcast, we're gonna be reviewing
Game of Thrones.
Eastwatch, Game of Thrones. So we have a lot to discuss with that. Check out Red Spotlight Entertainment. We'll have another thing to the table to you soon. Bye.